Welcome back in, everyone, to a fantastic new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so happy about the guests and the shows we have in store for you today. The New York City Fringe Festival is running April 3rd through the 21st at three venues this year, Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. All of our guests today are shows that are happening at 14Y Theater. Joining us, we have Suzanne Backner, Kat Nardizzi, and Bob Brader from Conversations with My Divorce Attorney, Tony Patron from The Fountain, Jackie Zhang and Jill Lee from Mulan and Now, Ella Veris from On Cats and Dogs and Other Family Revelations, and Queerly Femitastic and Professor M from Flossy Follies. This is a fantastic collection of artists and shows that we are so excited to continue to bring to you. So with that, let us welcome on our guests. Everybody, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Yay, hi. Thank you.
It's an audio medium, so like we should probably also say something.
Hi. We're doing this.
I'm looking for the air claps. So I'm there with you. I'm so happy to have all of you here. I'm so excited to learn more about your works. This is incredibly exciting. So if I could start by having you all tell us a little bit about your shows. Suzanne, would you tell us a bit about Conversations with My Divorce Attorney?
Well, it is about my divorce many, many, many years ago in LA, and I'm a native New Yorker, and Kat plays the me character exquisitely, and Bob plays my divorce attorney. And so it's about these two people who are sort of heartbroken and in isolation and separated from other people like we were in the pandemic, and make unlikely connections and really change each other's lives.
So wonderful. Ella, could you tell us a little bit about your show on cats and dogs and other family revelations?
Well, my show is, as the title said, it, you know, stories about my pets, my parents' pets. The thing is that I grew up in Romania and there was no concept of pets there. And so, you know, it's a story about pets, but also about family, about life in the Eastern Bloc. I try not to be heavy, but at times it seeps through, so you'll have quite a good measure of dark humor in it. And I just talk. Hopefully it's interesting.
Wonderful. Jackie Zhang, can you tell us a bit about Mulan and Now?
Yeah, sure. So this is a show about a modern girl named Mulan, which is a pretty common name in Chinese. And she is working in the marketing industry. And one day she was working on this project, and then she found out she was teleported back in history and became the Mulan in history. And she found herself in the situation where she has to fight the war and kind of become a hero. So, but, you know, it was very, to her surprise, you know, they were not treating women any worse than we are today. So yeah, you know, like back then, if you kill the enemy, you become a hero. But here, you know, if you want to design a men's makeup as a woman, you actually encounter a lot of challenges. And then she won, and then she was teleported back. So it was kind of, it's a comedy play. Hope everybody enjoys it.
That sounds incredible. Love it. Tony, tell us about The Fountain.
Sure. Fountain is a one-act dark comedy fantasy play. It's a three-person show. It's two time displaced companions are traveling through a labyrinth and they come upon a fountain in which there is a stone statue there who starts offering them anything they want, but for a price. And the two time displaced travelers, you have a rather modern day New Yorker like stoner slacker and then a Spanish conquistador from the 1500s. And so you have a little bit of a time displacement and language displacement between them. On top of the fact, they're also inside of this fantasy world that neither one of them kind of understand.
Wow, that sounds incredible. And bringing us home on this, we've got this great show, Flossy Follies, Queerly Femitastic, which is a fabulous name, by the way. Can you tell us about your show?
Yeah, so Flossy Follies is a celebration of bodies and the things bodies can do. So it is a cabaret review. We're going to have some sideshow. We're going to have some burlesque. We're going to have some draglesque. And the theme, we have different themes for different shows. We've had lots of different themes so far, but the theme for this show is going to be country because, you know, our Lord and Savior Beyonce has reminded us that country is a Black art form. It historically has always been a Black art form. And there was a concerted effort to separate country music from Black Americans, and Beyonce's like, not anymore. So we are going to be welcoming Black burlesque, drag, and sideshow performers to do acts to their favorite country songs by Black artists.
Incredible. Oh, this is amazing. Listeners, if you can't tell, this is just such an incredible collection of works, and we are so excited they're coming to New York for the New York City Fringe Festival. And I want to dive a little bit more into these shows. So, Kat, can I start with you? And can you tell us a little bit about what it's been like developing your piece?
Yeah, well, we've actually been developing this, or Suzanne, rather, has been developing this for a long time. And we actually spent a large period of time during the pandemic developing a virtual reading of the show. So it's been a really cool process to work on something for such a long period of time and see how it has shifted and changed. And it's been just lovely. I love working with Bob and Suzanne. This is not the first time I've worked with them. They are a dream team to work with. So collaborative, so supportive, so encouraging. And it's been just super fun overall to develop this and change it and grow with it.
Amazing. Jill Lee, what has it been like developing Mulan and now?
Yeah, I think like Jackie can answer this question more precisely. I'm in charge of the Mulan and now for this marketing and also the design things. Yeah, but Jackie, do you want to share?
I think we all contributed a lot into the story and storyline and, you know, the background behind it. So I actually didn't come from theater background. I came from computer science and I do real estate right now full time. So, you know, there were just a lot of flybacks when I was the only woman in the office. And I just know, you know, office hit politics a lot because I was there like the first 10 years of my career. And it was fun sometimes to see things from different perspective. So just kind of used some of that into the play, and it has been fun. Has been hard, definitely, because you know, everything about theater is new to me.
Well, that's fantastic. Congratulations on coming to the world of theater and bringing this great work. That's wonderful. Professor M, another fantastic name, by the way. I want to know more about Flossy Follies and what it's been like developing it.
Developing Flossy Follies has been such a bit of fun for Queerly and I, being able to do a show that highlights Black performers in nightlife and often Black and queer, that intersection as well, especially in working in nightlife and doing burlesque and all these sparkly people things. A lot of us performers are also producers because we have to make space for ourselves. And when we decided to do Flossy Follies, we wanted to have another space, but also try to do it in a different way. And when we looked at the calendar and saw that this new Beyonce album was coming and the country was there, it just felt like the most natural fit in the world. I like country music. I grew up with parents who love Westerns. I watched a lot of Westerns growing up. And I'm based in Connecticut. And up here, I work with a group called Ebony Horsewomen that has been around for about 30 years. And they do a lot of training of horse riding and equestrian care. And I'm actually about preparing for my second year of hosting the Black Boots Awards, which honors Black figures in equestrian. So I've gotten to meet actual Black cattlemen and cattlewomen across the country. And it's been absolutely amazing. And I'm looking forward to paying some tribute to them and the great legacy throughout the entire history of this country, of the country and Black folk, and where all that comes together in this music.
That is so amazing. Wow. Absolutely fantastic. Tony, I want to come to you with your show, The Fountain, and I want to know, what is the message or thought you hope that audiences take away from your piece?
Oh, boy. Of course, this is the one that I was looking at these questions before. I'm like, oh, man, what message do I really have here? I don't know if I necessarily have a message, so to speak. Like, I'm not, like, preaching one thing or the other, but I definitely left it vague enough and up to interpretation that I know that there's going to be multiple interpretations of what the piece actually is saying. And I did it once as a little stage reading last year alongside two other companion pieces. And the different answers I got from people on what they thought was happening was hilarious. So I love that there's so many different ways you can kind of interpret what is happening. So yeah, I guess I would like to take away that I don't want to have two people have the same two answers.
That is just smart. That is awesome. Ella, how about you? What message or thought are you hoping that people take away from your work?
I'm reluctant with the messages, you know, because I grew up, as I said, under communists, and there was a lot of propaganda with message and morality is fake. So, but I think I'd really love people to reconsider, you know, how much animals give to us and how there's no reason for us to feel so superior. Meanwhile, we ruin it for them. But it's also the history of the family, you know, the memories of what you keep after your loved ones are gone and what you want to do in their memories. I adopted my dog because of my father, the father's love for a dog. And also the fact that, yeah, sure, it's lovely that all shows are so politicized, but it's also somehow divisive. So I'd like to see some low-key stories that make us see the commonality, you know, the humanity in us. I think that might be a message.
I want to ask all of you now, who do you hope have access to your work? And Bob, can I start with you on that?
To me, I hope like everybody has access to the work, because I think our show really talks about the fact that, you know, when you're going through hardship, you really feel alone and isolated, and you feel like no one else is experiencing what you're experiencing. And to me, this show says that you're not alone. And this is something that people do go through, and, you know, hopefully you can make it through. So yeah, I don't know. Who do you hope gets access?
Well, I'm excited that these shows are going to be live streamed simultaneously, because it means that, you know, we can reach this, you know, wide population, which is exciting, yeah. You know, who we've connected with during the pandemic. So it's exciting to be doing a live performance on stage and also to be able to share that live streaming.
So even more people have access than just the people in the audience, which is fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. Tony, how about you? Who do you hope have access to The Fountain?
I mean, on a bigger picture business scale, someone who likes what I do and says, hey, I'll give you more money to do more of it. But I mean, just to put that out there. But on a realistic scale, again, you know, the touch on the streaming, I think that's so great. I think streaming theater is becoming bigger, and more nuanced and more technologically savvy. So that's great. But also, I think this show in particular, like you know, I grew up in the 80s watching like Goonies and, you know, and so, you know, I watched a couple F-bombs when I was 12. So like, yeah, I think my show is, you know, as long as you're not eight, like, I think anybody can come see my show. It's LGBTQ friendly. It's racially friendly. Like, it doesn't really touch on any of that. It's more, I don't know, it's just fun. So I hope everybody has access to it.
Yes, fun. We could use more fun in the world. Ella, how about you? Who do you hope have access to your work?
Again, the streaming is fantastic because, you know, I have a fellowship in Romania, so they can access it. My friend from Turkey can access it, so the streaming is fantastic. But then at another level, I'm also hoping my neurodivergent community will feel encouraged to come and see the show, and that would be a great thing. Both for them and for me, you know, to acknowledge the plight and be out there. I don't know. And the veterinarians, I hope the veterinarians come, you know, because we need them.
Jackie, who do you hope have access to Mulan and now?
So we do have an audience persona of women aged 25 to 45. And in that sense, we hope all the men could come as well.
Well put, love it. Jill, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think we may have our female actors. Actually, we are all like female teams, and we have the female actors and also the female audience, maybe like with their men, we could have a bigger impact. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Our final show, Flossy Follies, Queerly, who do you hope have access to this?
I mean, obviously the answer is everybody. Definitely going to hop on the bandwagon of people who want to fund more shows. Give us your money. But really, a thing that I've found is, particularly in the sort of mainstream community, most people don't know what burlesque is, right? They've heard of the movie, and they literally... If I had a dollar for every time somebody was like, oh, burlesque, like the movie, I would not have to work anymore. First of all, there's no burlesque in that movie. Nobody's taken off their clothes. And burlesque is about striptease. Okay? So people who don't know what burlesque is to come to the show so that they get an idea of what it looks like. Like, yes, some of what the girls do in Vegas is burlesque, right? Dita Von Teese has a residency out there right now, and she is literally doing the Lord's work in educating people as to what burlesque is, because even most of what you see in Vegas isn't burlesque, it's cabaret, and there is a difference. And so I want people who are like, I don't know what burlesque is, but I like fun, to come to the show. I want people who are like, I like country music, to come to the show. I want people who are like, what is sideshow? I don't get it, to come to the show. I want people who are like, I just want to support living artists, support working artists, to come to the show, because we are bringing in artists from all over the East Coast to do this. And, you know, as I've said in a ton of different places, people have a very specific idea of what burlesque is and isn't. And oftentimes, Black artists, specifically Black queer artists, Black artists who are queer, who exist outside of the gender binary, right? I'm thinking drag kings and drag things, folks who exist across the gender spectrum, aren't hired as often because people are like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't want my show to be political. So they don't hire people who might make the audience ask questions. And so I'm inviting an audience that wants to ask questions. I'm inviting an audience that wants to see things that they normally wouldn't get a chance to see and experience people, particularly like people who are doing an art form that is old and very American, to music that is old and very American.
Brilliantly put. Professor M, anything you'd like to add?
Sure, just very briefly, having people just expand their minds about what performance is, and to do black burlesque, black country burlesque in a city such as New York that prides itself on how diverse it is, on how big it is, on how it draws the best of the best across the world. Here's your chance to put your money where your mouth is. Here's your chance to show that with not just with our show, but with all of these fine shows that we're here with today and all of the shows that are in the fringe. And to also think about the fact that we are bringing black and queer burlesque to the New York City Fringe Festival. This is being done on a stage that it hasn't been done before. And God knows if we're going to have the wherewithal to do it again. So if there is the time, now is the time. Now is your chance. Do it. Do it now.
The second part of our show, we love to give our listeners the opportunity to get to know our guests a little bit better, pull the curtain back, if you will. And I would love to ask all of you, what is your favorite theater memory? Professor M, kick us off.
Yeah, I'm actually going to tell you two of them. So when I was in the sixth grade, I was one of those mentally gifted children, and they would put you in one of those special public school programs where they take you out of school for a day and you get to do stuff. And my mentally gifted program teacher was a big theater person. And so she would take us to various theaters to see stuff. We had a whole season ticket to the Arden Theater down in Philadelphia where I grew up. And this was back when they were still performing on a theater that was next to a church. It was actually inside a church building. And I remember going to see Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. And that was one of my first real experiences with Sondheim and being like, wait, you're telling me musical theater can be this insanity, this craziness of just demented stuff? And being a 12-year-old boy, that was like, yeah, I want this. Bring me more of that. This is absolutely fantastic. And also, through that same person, I got to shadow a production of Engelbert Humperdinck's Hansel and Gretel with one of the opera companies in Philly. And I got to go to the show. I was backstage during the whole production, got to talk to various singers and performers. And then I got to go out on stage with the prop master and one of the main stage designers for the end of the show when all the children are freed and returned to life. And I'm standing behind a piece of scenery while all of this is going on. And that just continued my love of theater.
Those two are such fantastic memories. I love those. Thank you for that. Queerly, what is your favorite theater memory?
I'm going to actually go with the theme here of Sweeney Todd. So I am from New York, born and raised. And so I went to a performing arts high school. I started doing like theater. Like the first time I was like a solo theater person, I was like six. So, you know, I've been on the stage my whole life. But when I was in high school, we did a production of Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. And we had this huge stage set piece that we had purchased that had the chair, and you pull the lever and the person like slides down through the set piece to come out into the basement. And so it was like a huge production. And I was in the ensemble, but I was like, I like props. Right. This is when before I was a cosplayer, before I was a burlesque dancer, I was just like a 15-year-old who was like, I like crafts and props and set design. And so I built a set of like prototype meat pies and a bunch of other set pieces and showed them to the director and was like, hey, I think we can do a bunch of stuff, because we didn't really have the budget. After we rented that giant set piece, we didn't have the budget to do a lot of other things, right? So I was like, here are my suggestions for props. And he was like, great, you're the prop master. You've got $200, go. And I built all of the like ensemble props for this massive show, and then was in charge of keeping them together and making sure they didn't fall apart through the run. And it was the first time that I was like, oh, I like being on the stage. I love singing and dancing. I was always the dance captain. I was in the color guard. Like, I love that kind of thing. But building the small details that make people believe that it's that they you are watching people eat meat pies that are made out of people, like that part is like, I realized then, like, wow, the details are what make this exciting for me. And so, you know, now that I am a cosplayer and I am a burlesque dancer, all of my burlesque is nerdlesque. Nerdlesque is when you take a character and do a burlesque act with that character. So there's always an Easter egg. There's always a reference, and it's really fun when people catch them. But, you know, a really big piece for me is like the details. What are the Easter eggs? What are the little tiny things that I can put on my body that I might have a prop or like a line in the song that tells people and invites people to be in the story? And honestly, those things make such a difference. Like it's really fun when someone comes up to me after a show and it's like, was that Poison Ivy? Was that Starfire? Like, was that Harley Quinn? Like when people really get it because of those little tiny details, it makes my heart happy, but it also invites the audience to like continue to look close.
I love that. That is amazing. Amazing. Thank you for that. Tony, tell us, what is your favorite theater memory?
It would probably have to be for one of the other projects I'm working on is a jukebox musical that I've been writing for the past like 6 years. And I got to do a kind of small invite industry read of it for some producers and some audience members. And I actually invited the band to come see the show as well. And it like I have done other things that I've written before, little shorts and like small cabarets, but I'd never done like a full on show before. And even still, this was just a stage reading, scripts in hands, minor blocking, but it was a 2.5 hour musical that I wrote for 6 years. And just standing aside and watching my actors do the show that I had written and directed and listening to the audience laugh at the parts and cry when I knew they were supposed to cry, and then having the band like come up to me and be like, it's so weird watching our songs sung at our faces. And like the one guy went to the lead of who's the lead singer of the band, went to the lead of the show and was like, you know, when I sing that song on stage, I'm using my falsetto notes and you're full on belting, you know, song after song after song on my face. He's like, that's just absolutely incredible. And just it was such a wild feeling, and it was one of the best moments of my life.
That's incredible. These memories are just amazing. Y'all are on fire today. Who would like to go next?
Hey, I love being part of a group, and we're a really great unit, but I'm also a solo artist. So I remember seeing Spalding Gray at PS 122 numerous times, and I saw one of his last performances, and it was amazing just to see him working through. I mean, it was after his accident. He had a car accident, and it was after that. And to watch him working through that, because the whole entire play was, the production was about him working through his accident and how he was coming through all of that. It was a breathtaking piece to see. And as a solo artist, I just appreciated him being able to take that pain and what he was working through and be able to put it on the stage still, even as he was still working through it. It was brilliant.
Wow, what a powerful moment. Jackie, what is your favorite theater memory?
When I was 9 and I was on the stage the first time, and there was an audience of 1,500 people, and that was fun. So I think everybody likes theater, or either from creating or performing, is because this is a way to influence people. So you are conveying a message to the audience, and you can see their reactions. You have an agenda, you have a script, and they don't know what's up. It's kind of fun, you know, sneakily. Meanwhile, there's like this power that you could influence other people. I guess I didn't understand back then when I was 9, but it was a lot of fun. And then I went to computer science, did a bunch of other stuff. And then coming back here, like when I was writing the story and putting things together, I realized, you know, I just, that piece of memory that I forgot for a really long time just woke up. And I remember that experience from so many years ago, and it was still so vivid.
That is amazing. 1,500 people. Wow. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
Pat, yeah, tell us yours.
So I guess just it's memorable to me because I'm a huge Harry Potter nerd, but the first time that I saw Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on Broadway was so exciting, both for me as like a fan of the books and the series, but just as an actor and as someone who loves to see theater. If you haven't seen it, it takes place like 20 years after the last book ends. So all of like Harry and everyone are adults, and it's about their kids. But the production itself just felt truly magical. Obviously, there's a lot of magic in the show, like literal stage magic. But I think it was like 2019 was the first time I saw it. And I just was absolutely in awe of every element of it, from the story, the direction, the choreography, the music. And it had me crying, it had me laughing, it had me feeling things. And I guess it's just one of my favorites because the power of theater is so incredible to me, and how it can inspire us, how it can move us. And it could be about something like Harry Potter, or it could be about, you know, something else. And yeah, I truly love the magic of live performance. And when you can see it on like a high scale, like Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and really have yourself going like, how did they do that? What's going on? You know, it's just awesome. It makes you feel like a kid. And so anytime I see theater that makes me go, oh my God, what? I'm just thrilled and excited. And I love to watch other people have that experience too. That's another thing I just love to do, is bring people who either don't see theater a lot to theater, or to see shows that I think that they'll enjoy. It's one of my favorite things, because there's just some magical element of live performance that you don't get anywhere else. So yeah.
Absolutely. What a great, great memory. I'm right there with you too. Who would like to tell their story next? Yes, please, Suzanne.
I'm going to bring this down to a tiny black box theater at Oberlin College, so just to get the expectations into that space. So I am not a performer, and in any way, like I wear all other hats, and I don't even like get, you know, it's, but my college professor was doing a double bill of Adrian Kennedy's The Owl Answers and A Movie Star Has to Star in Black and White. And I really desperately, and just like very obviously desperately, wanted to be part of this in some way. And she made me audition, which was like a small trauma in my college career and theatrical situation. And I'm like, I am not an actor. Like, this is humiliating. And she's like, no, just go out and do it. So I did it, because that's how desperate I wanted to be part of this. And she was like, well, yeah, you were kind of right. So you can be an ASM. So I was like one of two ASMs on this production. And it was just magical to be part of the process of putting this up. It was just an exquisite group of actors telling these stories. And it's such a brutal and poetic piece, both of these pieces, particularly for me, Owl. And I actually was like backstage, and I realized that some of the actors were just having issues with like this sort of the visceral impact of her work on them as they were performing it. And I just kind of held a little space for them, and I didn't really realize I was doing this, but I was kind of having this download of this play, having seen it in rehearsal, but experiencing it backstage, just sort of wash over me, and then having these extraordinary humans going out there and telling those stories in this powerful, powerful way. And I kind of had to, we just got into this thing, this one actor and I, where I would just hug him after this one really horrible scene. And I was just like, wow, this just goes above and beyond any moment in the theater. It's just like this whole period of time of us working on this piece together is just such a powerful, wonderful challenging and just like life-changing experience. Mm-hmm. So I was just very grateful to be part of that. And I was kind of glad that I sucked at acting.
That's a wonderful memory. Thank you for sharing that. Ella, tell us yours.
Well, one of the strongest memories about theater was after the fall of communism in, after 89, Andrei Sherban, he directed here the Greek trilogy, and he brought it after 89, he brought it to Romania, and it was just astounding. Before we were used, you know, with all kinds of propaganda on stage, but I don't know if your generation even saw those plays, but they are the people to see people naked in on stage, and the body was not sexualized, you know, it was used. It was just mind-blowing to see how they moved in the space, and we were in proximity to them. It was freedom. It was freedom, and it was... I really longed to be part of it. And then another memory is here in Montclair, New Jersey. I staged a musical called The Peasant Princess based on a Romanian fairy tale. And what stays with me was a little girl. We had children, three children in the show, the siblings of the peasant princess. And one of them was Violetta. Her mom was an opera singer, so she named her Violetta. And Violetta knew everybody's lines. And she was helping with the publicity. Her mother caught her multiplying the flyer on their photocopying machine. It was just unbelievable. She was comping everybody, you know. Yet we made real money, you know, within our, you know, it was a Montclair production, but we made money. So theater is marvelous. Yeah. Thank you.
Those are wonderful. I love it. Shout out to that little girl. Yes. Well, Jill, I think it's up to you to close this out. What is your favorite
thing? Sure. So I studied architecture when I was an undergraduate, and it was my first tag, and I was asked to design a stage for a comics called Turn Life and Turn Right. So this is about like a love story, but like people just meet with each other and finally they move together. I just, when I tried to find a reference, I saw the theater called Sleep No More. Also, this is that was a first theater that Sleep No More entered Shanghai. I studied in Shanghai in China when I was undergrad. So I just went to watch that theater and was totally like mind-blowing, like this immersive experience. Just bring me so much feelings and also like the mixture of senses to the theater itself. So I just like inspired by that, I designed my first stage design for that comics using the immersive like experience and also the space, like the spatial design. So I think I'm more like in front of exploring like the interpretation of different materials, different stages, different spaces, you know, sound, or even like smells to create different senses, and also have that different versions of one story told by, for example, the movies, the comedies, or like the theaters. They are all different ways, but you can feel like the theater, like this is like all on live, and you just, when you are immersed yourself in that, you totally feel like you have some tight relationship with that. It was not like that resonated with in the movies or other forms of arts. So yeah, I really want to try this. Also like the Mulan now is like my first try for the theater, like together with Jackie. Yeah, we are like not that professional, but yeah, we are using our passion to do that.
We're having fun.
That's wonderful. all of you, thank you so much for those amazing memories. My final question for everyone is, if our listeners would like more information about your show or about you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? Let us begin with the team behind Conversations with My Divorce Attorney.
Conversationswithmydivorceattorney.com,
but it's linktree.com/mydivorceplay.
Yeah. My Divorce Play on Instagram.
Yes. There you go.
How about Tony and the Fountain?
Sure. I actually just launched my own personal production company this year. So we're going to be doing not only just plays, but a couple other different things. Like, we're also launching a companion podcast that goes along with The Fountain. So you can find out about all the shows that we're working on. You can also have a link to the ticket site on Frigid NYC. All that stuff is at patronize.com. So it's my last name, PATRYNIZE.com.
The team behind Mulan and Now.
Well, we have an Instagram page, Mulan and Now, and New York Fringe, event link, ticket link, and we're going to have a web page up very soon. And we're thinking about submitting. Well, it depends, but we are pretty much decided we're going to submit to other fringes. So you can just go to our Instagram and follow us there.
Amazing. Yeah. Ella, how about you with On Cats and Dogs and Other Family Revelations?
My internet presence is like a difficult. I'm coming back to theater after 10 years of not publicly. So you can find me at my lackadaisical website, which is ellaveresh.com, or you can find me on Instagram. I'm also an artist, and I have my Instagram is vermilion.nyc, vermilion spelled with one L, and on the Fringe site, and hopefully pretty soon I'll be more active. Thank you.
Wonderful. Finally, our team at Fosse Follies, Queerly and Professor M. How can people get more information or contact you?
I'm Queerly Fantastic across every single platform. A shout out to one of my mentors, Cheryl Lay, who years ago was like, hurry up and get all your domains. And I was like, ah. So I'm Queerly Fantastic on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, the site formerly known as Twitter, Cash App, and Venmo. You just search Queerly Fantastic, I'm there. And we are in the process. We are currently accepting applications for the show. So if you are a Black drag king, if you are a Black sideshow performer, if you are a Black burlesque performer, and you're like, I would like to be on the stage with Queerly and Professor M, the link for that is in my bio on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all the things.
Anything for you, Professor M?
Yes, the best place to find me wherever I'm going to be active is on Instagram. You can find me at Marvin the Professor. That's actually what the M stands for. It doesn't stand for music. It does stand for making y'all shout. It does stand for that sometimes. But you can find me there on Instagram at Marvin the Professor, or my Linktree, which is Linktree/TheProfessorM. And yes, submit. Find a way to get to us. If you are Black and do performancey things and can do it to country music by Black artists, then get at us. We want to see what you've got.
Brilliant. Well, everyone, thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with me and share your amazing works. I'm so excited to take all of them in. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Break legs, everybody.
Yeah, awesome. Can't wait to see all of your shows. They sound fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah.
Break legs, everybody.
My guests today have been several of the performers and artists behind shows that will be part of the New York City Fringe Festival at the 14Y Theater. The New York City Fringe Festival is happening April 3rd through the 21st this year at three venues under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. And you can get your tickets for these amazing shows and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We also have some contact information about all of our guests, which will be posted on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you run, don't walk. Now, get your tickets for all these amazing shows and all the other shows we've brought to you so far with our coverage of the New York City Fringe Festival, happening April 3rd through the 21st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.